Redacted Media and Ghosthead.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Helgerson.
All right, and welcome to another episode of the Film Illogical Society, the countdown show, where we are counting down the top 100 comedies of all time, according to the BBC, which we all know British people have the best sense of humor, so they are the best judges for this type of thing.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Especially in today's case.
Today's is the most British film I believe we've had so far.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, there is one other one maybe, but this one is definitely British, but we'll get into it. It's in the loop. It's directed and written by Armando Iannucci. Came out in 2009, so it's relatively new. With me, as always, for all these shows is Chad Larry Helgerson.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah,
I have to be here, otherwise you're just talking to yourself.
Well, it's court orders, really.
Yeah.
And new to the show, she is joining us. She is an actor. She is an artist. She is basically a pretty awesome person. Candace Lauren Osler.
Hello.
The literal, like, embodiment of a Renaissance woman.
Yeah, it's a capital T on the.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yes,
so Candace, tell us a little bit about yourself, besides what I just said.
Aside from what you just said, I hail from Los Angeles, California.
Name dropper.
Tend to frequent. Oh, yeah. sure, if you want to put it that way. I tend to appear on set as a crafty person now and again, and I'm well known for putting sushi in the mouth of people who work on those sets. Well,
who doesn't like sushi?
So far, not the people that I meet.
Okay, so Candace, this is we're 30 movies in. Now, and you're joining our show, and we're grateful that you're joining our show now.
We need to mix it up a bit.
Right.
Yeah. So the people don't know what they're
doing. So what kind of films do you generally gravitate towards?
I really appreciate action, adventure, fantasy, sci-fi, thrillers, horror. Horror's a lot of fun.
She likes horrors.
28 Days Later. Horror
or W.
Those horrors.
Yes.
Yes.
She's saying she likes whores.
the H variety.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just clearing it up. You know, we are a PG-13 podcast, so. So this is a comedy list, and I think, you know, when Chad and I first started talking, and just to kind of, we both like comedies, but this list is definitely a broad list of comedies. And I think we're going to get into that in today's. So again, number 70 on the list, In the Loop. It was based off a British television show created by the same director and writer called The Thick of It. Which only had three of the same actors in the movie, which is kind of weird. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the main actor, you may know him as Chad. Which doctor is he? I don't know. I don't watch the doctor. What?
He's the 12th doctor. Yeah, he's 12.
Okay, Peter Capaldi. So he's. But there's also some American actors. So before we get too much into the plot and the actors, we should pause for station identification. Show me the way I can be with you. You will- I'm just doing that just in case we get picked up. We're ready.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's, I'm thinking ahead.
That's where we put our sponsor message.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. For, what is it this year? Condensed milk?
Condensed milk and shoe polish.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we set our sights pretty accurate.
Super high.
Accurately.
Yes.
Over the moon.
Okay, so let's talk about the actors.
Specifically which one? Did we start with Peter?
Well, so that's where, you know, so we just played our little musical intro that the producer told me I should put in to kind of break it up.
I don't know who that guy is.
So I'm gonna pause. So, yeah, so let's talk about the main actor. So Malcolm Tucker, Candace, what have you seen Peter Capaldi in before? Anything?
Yes, I have seen a couple episodes of Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi. He's a lovely fellow.
Is about the same amount of F-bombs, I'm guessing, in Doctor Who as in this one?
Oh, yeah. I think Doctor Who, so many more F-bombs. they just, you know, they don't care on that show.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He regenerated into just a real turd.
Yeah, they let it rain.
So Peter Capaldi, so Malcolm Turner is the, what's his role? I forget what his role was, like assistant communications director or something like that?
He's the director of communications for the Prime Minister.
For the Prime Minister, so British government. And he has his teams, but he's basically the first one to kind of take care of any shit that goes down, right? Like... He yells at everybody.
He definitely is probably the most qualified to be the director of communications because he communicates a lot. Very fast.
One
and with vigor.
And then the foil, kind of the opposite to him, is Tom Hollander, who plays an elected official in the British government, Simon Foster. What do you think about Simon Foster, Chad?
I liked how he was always dwarfed by everybody, by Peter Capaldi, by
Chris Addison,
James Gandolfini. Yeah, everybody was taller than Tom Hollander, and it made for good back and forth when he would like try to stand his ground.
Yes,
but then somebody would just like show a little bit of. You know, a counterpoint, he'd just completely back away like a cowardly animal. So, I just thought he was, like, he was trying to be true to himself the whole time. And in the end, I don't want to get that far, but, I don't know how to finish that now because I don't want to give away the ending yet because we really haven't talked about what happened.
It's good to leave people in suspense. We'll get to that in just a little bit.
I really liked, Mimi Kennedy, who played Karen Clark, who was like the opposite of the head of, the State Department.
Yeah.
She was like the assistant, head of the State Department.
So, a U.S. representative now. So you have the British government and the U.S. government. So this is a political comedy.
I mean, very much. Well, and it's a political comedy, and also it juggles a lot of characters. And what was nice is that you didn't have to really see the thick of it to watch this movie and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's partly due to, you know, who they casted and what kind of characters they played.
And you had, so you have the male... Lees, and you also have David Rash, who I knew as a kid, from... Is that an alarm?
Is your house blowing up, Chris?
Not my house.
No, that's... My neighbor has a truck outside that they keep backing up. That beeps. Ah. Yay!
So that's not a fire alarm. Everyone's okay. Don't worry.
Yep, good.
So David Rash is a character actor. He's been in... He's got 131 acting credits. But where I remember him most is an 80s sitcom called Sledgehammer. Have either of you heard of that sitcom before?
No.
Sledgehammer.
But I'm looking at the poster right now.
Yeah, it is in the vein of Police Squad.
Okay.
Where it's basically, it's a comedy. He was the main person. His name in the show was Sledgehammer. And his solution to all problems was just to shoot it with his big gun. And this was a comedy.
Very 80s of him.
Very 80s, yeah. So I was pleasantly surprised to see him. And he's been in lots of things, but it's been a lot of little type of things. So it's good to see him.
He's really good at just being the worst.
Yeah, like being like either a bad guy or a jerky guy or guy that wants to shoot things with his big gun. Whatever, he does that. Candace, any standouts for you acting wise that you saw that you liked?
I had a moment where I turned to TC, who was sitting next to me while I was watching this, and I told him it reminded me of a production we were on recently, just with the everyone trying to find out what's going on without alluding to the fact that they don't themselves know what's going on.
Yes.
And just the sad reality that is probably pretty true to how it is. In politics today,
yeah,
people not knowing what's going on.
Oh yeah, I think so. So the writer and director of this, he also has done the HBO series Veep, which many of these actors also are on Veep. So he brought them with. So he seems to have this niche than for like the political commentary type
the inner workings
of... yeah, and he's very British as well, so he's Scottish, don't mean to offend anybody.
Yeah,
Scottish.
I, that was one of my favorite jokes out of many in this movie, like, don't ever fucking call me English again. And Peter Capaldi walks away.
Yeah. A couple other actors of note, just want to point them out. Anna Chomsky.
Oh, yeah, from My Girl.
Well, I'm glad that she got over, you know, seeing her best friend get killed by bees to be into a very positive role of helping other people. So
after she fell in love with that boy from California.
Right. Well, that's true. She did do that.
I think that was the sequel. I can barely remember. Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I was going to move on, so if you have something else to say about her, go ahead.
No,
I was going to say it.
Oh, my God.
You have to say it now.
Say it, Chad.
I thought she was very good at acting.
Well, that was...
There, aren't you glad you said
that
it?
Yeah.
That was worth it.
That was worth it.
The other actor I want to point out is Zach Woods, who
I love Zach Woods.
You may know him from The Office. He's also in Silicon Valley, and he's
in everything.
He's just like the tall, awkward guy. That's the role he plays.
Yes,
and he does it really well.
This role was nice though because he was actually antagonistic. yeah. versus like normally he's normally kind of a pushover, and he is, but with Liza and her character and them going at it every 10 seconds was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, because they're both ambitious, and Chad, aptly named Chad, Zach Wood's character.
All douchebags are named Chad in movies.
More likely to stab somebody in the back to get ahead versus Liza and Chomsky's character, more likely to also stab someone in the back to get ahead. But, you know, that's besides the story. That's besides the point. So it really is. It's really hard to focus on any one actor. Just because there are so many. This is different from many of the other films we've seen where it's, you know, one or two actors kind of highlight and then you have the rest of the cast. This is a lot of people. We haven't even talked about James Gandolfini having a significant role in this.
Yeah, and like pretty much playing the same character, but I never get tired of him playing that character. Like, just big... overpowering man who breathes through his nose and just like stares at you. Man, my favorite scene was him and Capaldi.
Yeah.
And like they're going, they're going tit for tat and toe to toe. And like, I just was imagining somebody was going to break. That's how much the tension was just so awesome in that scene. But yeah, Gandolfini's always. Like, I mean, once Sopranos came out, like, he could do no wrong. It's only sad that he died pretty young.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I mean, obviously he wasn't the picture of health. It isn't. You can see, like, in a lot of roles, he's breathing heavy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was all acting.
No, but, like... It works.
It works. It works like, for him. It works for him. It worked for him.
It did work for him, Chris, because he's dead.
That's true.
How dare you? How that dare is true. You?
51 years old when he died.
Damn. So
very young. So let's talk a little bit about I'm watching this film with my wife, and early on I turned to her and I'm like, this feels a lot like The Office.
Oh yeah,
you know. So
I mean, this is.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, this came out about the, you know, right around the time of the British Office, or this is no, not the British. The American Office was out, but the thick of it was out. I think around the time of the British Office, which kind of reinvigorated the handheld camera sitcom. You know, documentary style of filming it, and it did feel like that. I mean, just the way that the sets were, pretty well built. You know, I think some of it was done actually on location, so you know, at different offices in Parliament or in the U.S. state houses or buildings, which is pretty. Unique, I think, for a British film. But I don't know, Candace, what did you think about the feel of this film?
Well, I would have to agree. Definitely thought about The Office, just and with the end credits, the shot where they had the camera just sitting in the office, staring as everyone's going about their business.
Yeah,
go ahead, Jeff. Definitely, like, I mean, it was because what American Office was what 2004, 2005, and then by this time Parks and Rec was probably like a season or two in.
Yeah.
So it the genre, and it's I'm trying to think of current shows that still do this. Oh, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah. So like it's a style and a choice that's still used today. I definitely like it if it's done right. Because it's weird. It's not quite mockumentary because nobody really addresses it. It's not Spinal Tap, where they, in the beginning of the film, they set up that this is a documentary. Like, these shows always just like give you no context, but just give you the feeling that you're kind of like spying in on these people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and like with anything, it obviously could be overdone. You know, I don't think there's as many comedies that are using this method now.
Not as much as then, no. Right. But it's still out there.
It is. Yeah. Have either of you seen Veep?
I've seen a couple episodes. I know they just finished their run, right? This is the last season?
I think so.
Unfortunately, no.
I have not either. So no.
I mean, I hear it's awesome. They've won a ton of awards. Tony Hale's it. Like, there's so many good people in it. I might go back and just watch it.
Just the episodes, the couple episodes you said that you saw, Chad. Same feel? Is this the director's style, or is this show kind of unique?
I mean, it's unique in the, I guess, sort of the similar way I kind of find like Parks and Rec unique. Once it got out of its first season and having like a main lead female character, but strong willed and like doesn't get pushed over. I mean, that's Julie Louise Dreyfus. She's always been like that. And I saw episodes years ago. So, and I think it was when she was still like VP, because eventually she becomes president, right?
I don't know. She has to do something because you can only be VP for so long, right?
Yeah, I think they go into like 9 seasons. At one point, she runs for president and she wins. So I know that, but yeah, it's definitely his taste. But like, I mean, that's not uncommon. The guy that show ran The Office, Parks and Rec, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like, you know, it's the same thing with Chuck Lorre stuff. He's gonna always use his brand of writing and style versus, you know, XYZ.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I just, having not seen Veep, just, I was just curious.
Well, curiosity killed the Chris.
No, I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
All right, Chad.
Oh, man.
All right, so you can tag in Candace to help you, okay, Chad?
Okay. Candace, we're doing a
plot summary. Normally,
plot summary. I normally would just like ramble, but they went too long, so now I'm trying to do them in like a minute ish. So,
how much time do you want on the clock for this one?
I want a minute. This wasn't as hard as last week, I think.
Were you you wanted 3 minutes last week?
Yeah. What did we watch though? I'm trying to remember.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, oh man, that was so layered. No, this is a little bit easier.
Okay.
I'm ready. Okay.
Are you ready, Candace, to help in if he needs it?
I'll try. Okay. But if, you know, I start sinking, then you gotta pick it right back up.
Alright.
Alright, we're starting the timer right now.
Okay, so In the Loop is essentially a geopolitical dark comedy that deals with both UK and United States politics. There's a Middle East conflict going on, and there's talk about people going to war. The Minister for International Development unintentionally like pulls himself into the back and forth conflict about pro-war or not war, and his office and all his aides are now thrown into this situation. Man, I know I'm way over a minute on this one. Anyways.
20 seconds.
Shut your mouth.
Woo, good shit. All
right. So, essentially, it's a cat and mouse game of different people at different political levels making all these decisions with no evidence. There's an aide to a State Department official who wrote a damning review of what the potential casualties of war could be and why they're bad, and that ends up getting leaked and causes a stir. Oh my god.
There was a jingle or something.
That was the alarm.
Yeah, thank you. Basically, you have the United Kingdom going to the United States, showing up to a State Department meeting that wasn't supposed to be. Oh my god, I'm so freaking lost now. See,
tag,
I had...
Tag.
Candace.
And, you know, so someone says something, and then another person blows it completely out of proportion, and then people run away with it, and that gets other people mad, and then the other people who are mad try to fix things, and, you know, one person says one thing, another person says another, and that's how wars do and don't start.
Yeah, it pretty much was a telephone game.
I think we just need to record that part, and we can reuse that for, like, almost every movie. That was perfect.
Yeah. Things get said, and then they're said differently.
Someone tries to fix it.
Yeah. And then someone says, you know, the thing that you thought was said, it was never said at all. That's fact. And we believe it.
Oh, that was... Oh, man. Sorry, I just realized the guy who played Paul, it was Steve Coogan. Paul was Steve Coogan.
Yeah, Steve Coogan had a cameo.
Like, who the hell is that?
So really, it's a political intrigue, right? Because you have two countries not sure if they're going to go to war and not wanting to show their cards, right?
Well, and it's the hawks versus the hippies, essentially. You know, there's State Department official that just doesn't give a shit and will go to war without any evidence, while a three-star general says there's no evidence and wants to release a report that's written by Liza to pretty much show everyone that this is stupid.
Well, and what's funny then is that the Hawks edit that report.
Yep.
Remove all the stuff that says this is why we shouldn't go to war and release it to prove this is why we should go to war.
Which... you'd be surprised how much that actually happens in real politics. It's crazy. Can I just say, and we never really said anything about the ending because there really isn't. Like, we just go to war and we find out what the consequences of everyone's actions up until that point are. You know, people break up and people have to resign, people have to quit, people get moved up. But, like, the end's so nice because it's, like, just like politics, it's a new day, a new person's here, and we're going to go on like nothing happened.
Yeah, Simon Foster is essentially fired from government.
He was going to resign.
Well, he was going to resign.
And then he was not going to resign.
Talked out of it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't fired because of war or because of his misstatement and... inability to call it back and then reaffirm and then recall it back and reaffirm, basically waffling on the entire thing of going to war. He was fired because a wall fell on a greenhouse
that he didn't get fixed.
One
of his constituents complained too much.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a fitting end because, like, Simon didn't, He was like what most of us were sort of back, you know, 10 years ago, especially, I mean, we're still in a war now, but we were multiple wars then. But he got punished in the end because he never made a decision.
Right.
Like, he wavered too much. He kept towing the line up the middle, and that's what ended up getting him screwed in the end.
Yeah, he kept trying to make everybody else happy. Like, he would make the Hawks happy, he would make the Doves happy, but he never followed up with his constituents.
Yeah, which is, like, kryptonite for any politician.
Should be.
Well, most politicians.
Should be.
Should be. Candace, can you talk about, like, the parallels with the movie? And it's not, it's probably one of the newest movies we've seen on this list. Because a lot of stuff we've seen is pretty, it's been pretty old shit on here, Candace. But do you have anything on maybe, like, the parallels of then and today? Like, we're, it still seems like we're having these discussions or, you know, does history just repeat itself?
Well, this film is only 10 years old. So we're kind of still in that same era.
Still, though, they didn't have smartphones in this movie. they had flip and, like, slide phones.
Okay. You're right.
It's pretty old.
You're right.
It's just, it's a disheartening look that still feels like a relevant take on what goes on in politics. A bunch of people who are looking out for themselves, trying to make power moves for themselves, and in doing so, sometimes those get taken as bigger, more relevant moves within society, or statements rather, which is how wars can get started. And it's ridiculous because it can all be because someone said a small little statement in an interview that wasn't any more than just an off the cuff sort of thing.
Yeah, it's very much a nobody listens to anybody else. And they try to create the facts, whether it be the report or changing the report, to fit their narratives.
And look where that's led us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sort of is like a really creepy look into our future. If I would have watched this film back then.
So what, Candace, what is your, if you were to climb the mountain of conflict, what would be your mountain?
What would be my, can you rephrase the question?
What's your mountain of conflict and how would you climb it? Like, would you hire a local climber to help you up?
Yeah, and a publicist so they can say all the things that I shouldn't say or rephrase it in a way that it can be said.
Yeah, the kind of the phrases that the character used to kind of like climbing the mountain of conflict being one
to
of
get
them.
To the descending piece, you have to climb the mountain of conflict or something like that.
Like, basically just confusing statements that, like, what?
He's not making a decision. No. Like, there's people like that everywhere. I mean, I do it sometimes, too. But
do you? I don't know if you do. Maybe you do.
In the beginning, I'll do it until I see that it's more of a problem. Like, if the problem escalates, then it's like, all right, I have to make a decision whether it's wrong or right. You know, like, we have to go with something, so.
Yeah. So the word, we can say it once to keep it PG-13, so the word fuck is said 135 times in this film.
Yeah.
86 by one character.
I actually, before I saw this movie, back when it came out, my buddy Jason said, hey, you have to watch this movie, but watch this supercut of how many times this guy says fuck. And he sent me a supercut video. Well, sorry, are we out of PG-13?
Yeah, we're now at R. Thanks, Chad.
Sorry.
Once again. So the original shooting script was 237 pages.
What? What?
Wow.
Yep.
They talk so fast in that movie, too. Like, that's like, wow.
Yeah, 30 days of filming, 237 wow. pages long was the script.
Wow.
The first cut, 4.5 hours.
Wow. For a comedy?
Oh,
for
man.
For a comedy like this, which has a lot of, like, there's a lot of moving pieces going on. So to yeah. me, that has to be hard to edit it, because you don't want to miss maybe something that seems small in the beginning that actually has a big impact. Like all editors, right? But I mean, this, it could be a line, it could be just a character being introduced, whatever.
I mean, I'm assuming if the original edit was that long, they probably cut like multiple storylines of certain characters.
Yeah.
Because like, why would you have that much? I mean, essentially, he probably wrote it in the same way he wrote the show, in more of a long form format.
Thought there'd be like 13 episodes, and
yeah, I didn't realize he couldn't release, you know, 3 movies, one each year. Like Star Wars.
So the
or a Marvel movie.
So Chad, as an editor, like, so a feature length film, you're being paid to edit now.
Mm-hmm.
How long is a typical film to edit? Like something like this, which obviously there's not a lot of special effects. Obviously, there's things like color correction. There's going to be obviously audio and stuff like that, but there's no special effects. There's no CGI. There's no big things that take up that's kind of outside of the editor's hands.
Put me on the spot because I've never edited a feature before. But if I were to guess, probably at least a couple months, because you get not only the physical cutting of the stuff, but like you got to log all that footage. You have to pick all your takes. There's in that situation, you have to know everything has to be labeled. So it's almost like a police work where the editing part's like the fun, like arresting people and doing all the cool flips and shit part, like, you know, Hot Fuzz, but then them doing all the fucking paperwork, like that's the boring part of editing that nobody ever sees. But yeah, I'd say a couple months. Like that's a couple months to 6 months, depending on how crazy the feature is.
So this was four months to complete this film. And again, the first cut was 4.5 hours long.
Yeah, that's... I don't even know where to start with a 4.5 hour cut. Like, but I mean, at that point, I'm sure they brought the director in and be like, here, you fix this, you jerk.
Yeah, I'm sure I would just not want to ever see this again at that point. All right. So let's get some overall impressions. So, Candace, what are your thoughts on this film? Did you like it? Did it work for you? Did it not work for you? Why?
I will say when I first turned it on and started watching, It lost my attention 4 times, which I then noticed and tried to avidly make a note to pay more attention. I did enjoy it overall, just classic dry British humor. Very well acted. I was very amused by Peter Capaldi.
He's shorter than I thought he would be.
Yeah. He's
still okay. Taller than Simon, though.
He was, but mm-hmm. He wasn't that tall. He's intimidating in this role.
Simon's just a little guy. Is.
But he's indecisive, though, so that makes him okay.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It was kind of hard to follow at times because I think you're just kind of thrown in, so you don't really know what's going on.
Well, and I mean, the fact that it was originally a 4.5 hour movie tells you that, too. Like, it's just, it's fast, but it's still, especially for a comedy, too, it was an hour and 45, an hour and 47 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's hard to pull off, and it's rare than it actually, you know, that it actually works at that length.
So, Chad, what are your thoughts about this film?
I liked it. Peter Capaldi, like, some of the stuff he said was vile, but at the same time, like especially towards Judy, like, he was just very vile to her, but at the same time, he was vile to everybody, and just a man on a mission to, like, please his prime minister.
Yeah. Well, he was an equal opportunity
asshole.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what got cut out, because they did, like, I feel like Judy probably had more stuff. Like the relationship with Olivia and Chris probably had more. And like there was no, like we only knew a little bit of what happened between Karen and James Gandolfini's character. So, I love British humor. So like the super fast, the really dry retorts. Like I love it. I'll eat it up. I definitely would watch this again just because I feel like I missed a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Overall.
Yeah, like so to me, to Candace's point of getting lost, like the opening scene, it's Malcolm getting to the office in the morning and listening to some of the press that had been done or the interviews that were done, and he listened to the one. And I'm sitting there not knowing if is this important or not? Are we just learning about this character? Like, you know, because a lot of films are written that, you know, he may listen to one press interview and then go to another one, and maybe there's something in that one or the third one. But this was, like, right away. And I can see how you can get kind of out of it, like, right away with this film. So it does take a little bit more focus, especially, too, getting... for me, it's like I need to acclimate myself to the accent a little bit, too, just to kind of figure out some of the words, especially when you get the later on in the film and you get the super foul-mouthed Scottish guy.
Jamie, that's it. Yeah.
Where he's like...
He went full Office Space on the fax machine.
Yeah. Yeah, he, like, tortured a fax machine to get people to talk. It was fascinating. Fascinating.
If you're into political stuff in general, I mean, there's quite a few political comedies out there, but... I don't know. There's, at least in my opinion, there's very few that are actually, like, really good. I would put this close to the top.
Wait, and you...
Like, as far as... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, this is something to it. It feels more real than a lot of political comedies that are more satires.
Yeah, because it's shot in the handheld way, mm-hmm. which gives the viewer that third-person... look into that world versus, like, you know, hey, we're gonna do a wide setup here and then legs are gonna cross and blah blah blah, like,
well even like Arrested Development has the same style of shooting,
mm-hmm.
but it yep. doesn't feel as real because it's just ridiculous situations and I think so I feel that the situations and everything was presented, like Candace, you said earlier, this feels like it's actually could be happening.
Agreed.
Concur.
All right. Good. It's always good to have all these differences validation. To work out. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on this film? I think this one was more straightforward than a lot of the films that we've seen so far. Candace, I know this is the first one you're joining us on, but it kind of stands out as different from some of the others. Because, again, there's no central character. There's not a, there's a plot, but it's not, you know, it's not, it doesn't follow the standards that I think most people are accustomed to with films, so.
Do yourself a favor, Candace. Don't watch movie number 89, Daisies.
Or do.
Oh,
or
yeah?
Do.
What, if, why is that?
If you're...
If you're trying to... Yeah, because we're gonna add you to all the other ones we've done already.
Yeah.
So if you could listen to it and record yourself and insert yourself, and then I will add your audio to all the other ones.
So we're gonna George Lucas this in the 90s?
Yeah.
And be like, hey, let's
yeah, she
let's
was
put Candace
there
in the
entire
yeah.
time.
I'm gonna dub in my own commentary within your
right.
guys's
yep.
Okay. All
right. Yep. So that's just if you can get that done by next week, that'd be great. I'll re-release them
okay.
all with
yeah.
you in it.
Totally.
That'd be good.
31 episodes.
So our next film is the first film from Woody Allen.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I know. We took on this challenge, though, knowing the allegations against him.
I know.
So, I think there are a few Woody Allen films on here. Have either of you seen any or much of Woody Allen films?
Very few. I know I have, but I cannot recount them for you.
The only one I've seen, and the only one I like... Because
well, it's one for
really
one.
Good.
Then you've only seen one and you're only like, so you like 100% of the Woody Allen films that you've seen.
No, I yes. What's Up, Tiger Lily? It's he took it's either a Japanese or a Korean movie, and he redubbed all the voices over the actors with English actors and made a new story about it.
Okay,
so. It's actually pretty good, and it should be on this list.
I don't believe it is, but...
it's not.
So this film is number 69, Love and Death, from Woody Allen, a 1975 film. I have not seen any Woody Allen. I'll be honest. I never really was drawn to any Woody Allen films. I think he was strong like in the 70s. That was like his heyday.
Yeah, 70s definitely was his heyday.
Yeah, 70s, maybe, like, maybe early 80s.
I didn't hear about Woody Allen really until like college when I really started getting into like film school and stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, that sort of sounds interesting, but you know.
I mean, I know hey. A lot of comedians like him. A lot of filmmakers have liked him.
He pulls in a lot of A-list people for his movies.
Yeah. So I think next week will be an interesting talk, even if it's mostly focused on Woody Allen and his impact on film and...
the zeitgeist in general.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I think he's had a lot of impact, a lot of negative impact lately, as he's... Yeah, I'll have to read much of the internet to figure out everything about him. So yeah, I think we have at least three total films from Woody Allen on our list. So we'll have plenty yes. of opportunity to talk about him. And who knows, maybe by the time we get into this, he'll be in jail. You never know. You never know.
You wish America worked that way.
All right. So, Chad, any final thoughts from you?
No, I think I might try to check an episode or two of
In the Thick?
The Thick of It.
The Thick of It?
Yeah.
Candace, any final thoughts? And again, thank you for joining us.
Oh yes, thank you.
I think having someone who is more on the acting side will provide some great perspective. As we go forward.
Well, I hope that's true, and I will try to uphold that.
I mean, I looked you up on IMDb. It does say you're an actor.
Oh,
so,
did you
yeah.
now? And does it? Yes. Yes, it does. And yes, I am. Thank you.
Any final thoughts about this film or anything about next week's film that you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to talking about next week's film, you know, a little better than I didn't talk about this week's film.
Oh, that's not true.
Well, I'm...
What are you doing? What are you doing, Chad?
I found a laser pointer while you guys were talking.
Yes. Yes, you did.
It's good that this podcast is a visual podcast, so everyone's enjoying that.
Now listen to us react to Chad playing with the laser.
I'm just waiting for the cat to jump on his face now.
Oh, there he goes.
And Chad's gone.
Chad, now he's on the ground. Yep. He's crying. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a lot of blood. Well, I didn't know his face could bleed that
much.
I'm
glad you joined us now because it's still a twosome. So that works.
Yeah, looks like you're in need of someone.
That works out well. It's like you paid the cat or something.
Who would have thunk? Yeah.
All right. So my final thoughts and how I'll end it is just remember, everybody, Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Well, thank you, everybody. This has been our show.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghosthead Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthead.net.